Hi, welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired, break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today. Hi, everybody. This is We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. We've got Debbie Unterman, who's back in the studio for a third conversation. Thanks, Debbie, for being here.
Thank you, and you're welcome.
The reason we're having a third session is we got off the air after our second one, and Mike started sharing what his experience was from being involved with the conversation and listening to us.
Absolutely.
And this is the... Hi, Mike.
Hi, Nancy. How are you doing? Hi,
Thanks
Debbie.
Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
So I want to give Debbie a brief introduction for the audience members who haven't tuned in for the prior two sessions. They probably will after this, or if they haven't. But anyways, Debbie Unterman is a clinical hypnotherapist, author, mediator, speaker, and game inventor. She likes to help people see things clearly in some non-traditional ways. In her book, which I highly recommend because it has exercises in that have to do with the archetype types that we all have, you know, those are the voices inside of our head. It helps you name them. So, you know, if you're Miss Bossy Pants,
I love that name.
Bossy Pants?
Is that one of yours, Nancy?
Yeah, that's one of mine. Bossy Pants. Yeah, so I'm going through the book and I'm naming the archetypes that the voices that are coming up that I say to myself, you know, when I'm in the middle of yoga class or right before I go on the mic or something, you know, some funny voices. But anyway, she's written this fantastic book called Talking to Myself, Learning to Love the Voices in Your Head. Debbie describes an array of characters. She says we all have rattling around, like I just described, in our brains, such as the judge, the rebel, the victim, and maybe even Mr. and Miss Perfect, or what I call, and the teacher or the bossy pants. As a master alchemist and trainer, she's been delving inside people's heads for 34 years. She's achieved proven results from clients suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder and a whole bunch of other areas of her specialty, sexual abuse, depression, codependency, etc. But even though she can help you work through your issues, she's very interested in creating new paradigm of playing through your issues, which is what she's doing with hundreds of people who are playing her transformational games of clarity and Satori, the game of radical forgiveness. And so Mike is here, and he would like to share his experience with listening to our conversations.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Mike.
I started talking about this as we finished the second session and sharing my pleasure listening to you, and did experience a great interest listening to you. Problem is that many years ago, I read this book by Spencer Lewis, and he was talking about the spiritual alchemy. The spiritual alchemy, and but to that end, he had to refer obviously to what was known as alchemy many years ago in antiquity, pretty much mentioning people like Sir Isaac Newton and Leibniz and many others who first thought it was possible to convert poor minerals into gold. But ultimately, that changed into, you know, what you have been describing here on how do you transform yourself? How do you change stuff that have been put into you or negative things into gold and become the best side of yourself? And so I found that that was extremely interesting. And I was wondering how possibly can somebody train into that? I know in our first session, you probably mentioned a few schools around, but do you have any disciples with you or people who learn to become alchemists with you?
I do. I have been training people since 1989. So my students are all over the place because I even went to New Zealand in the early 90s for 4 years and trained some there. So I have, you know, many in New Zealand, some in Hawaii. There are a lot in California because there's another school there that teaches it. And my students are sometimes here in Atlanta, Georgia, and a lot of them have moved out of state, so they're really strewn all over. So yes, I never have called them disciples before. I like that.
Yeah. And the reason why I'm calling them disciples, because I don't know, and I think you referred to this at some point throughout a conversation. I think we're getting to the point where people start accepting this, that science, quote unquote, because it used to be considered as a pseudoscience and some woo-woo sort of thing.
Yeah.
But as you said, more and more today, people are becoming aware to the fact that despite the pills and everything else, your willingness, your power of will is most important than anything. And that's why we still have placebos and, you know, nocebos going on. It's known that every medicine that comes out, when they test it, at least 30% of people will be given the wrong medicine, but they will be cured
right.
with the wrong thing.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you brought up the placebo effect. That is so true.
Yes.
Because I actually thought of that, Nancy, when you were talking about your hip surgery and how you made sure to get everyone in the highest, mindset, and that it worked really well and you were off your crutches and walking so quickly without pain. And I was actually thinking that, yes, you know, there is power in what you did. And yes, if you believe it, that's a placebo effect, that it will work also. So I wasn't going
right.
to say that,
yeah.
you know, but I'm glad, Mike, that you actually mentioned the placebo
Thanks,
effect.
Mike.
Because it is so important for people to know that there is yeah. mind over matter. And it does work. It has been working forever. Doctors know this. Medicine knows this. They just don't tell us that yeah. a lot of medicine is the placebo effect. And that's why witch doctors work for their tribe, but they wouldn't work for us because their tribe believes in their magic or their, you know, methods as shamans that they are. But we would have to have a belief system for it to work for us. And what you were saying about science now getting with the program, so to speak,
yeah.
And what I was saying about in 1983 when I started this is that I actually have a set of encyclopedias, believe it or not, a set of encyclopedias that sit on my bookshelves. Mm-hmm. They're from 1987, and you can look up the brain, and it will say that the neurons, the nerve cells of the brain die, and they cannot regenerate. This was science in the 80s and 90s. It's very new that they understand the neuroplasticity mm-hmm. of the brain cells, that they actually do regenerate. But we have been saying, as this kind of alchemist, alchemical hypnotherapist, we have been saying that we are creating new neurological pathways. We've been saying that since the 80s. They are now calling them very similar. They're calling them new neural pathways. We call them neurological pathways. And they're now calling them neural pathways. And so that's what I meant, that science is catching up to what we have been doing since the early 80s. And that the process that I was describing earlier about what we call running and changing incidents. And I'll just go over it again in case somebody didn't hear me say it a couple of weeks before.
Sure.
That, that if, let's say, stage fright, for instance, which so many people have, you know, they may have an incident where they were a little kid They were stuck up there on stage with a duck costume or something on them. And, you know, maybe it fell off, the head fell off, and everybody laughed at them. Or, you know, they were supposed to quack and they didn't remember to quack on time, or, you know, whatever it was. You know,
right. They had right, in a school play.
Right. Or sometime on stage where they just, you know, they looked at everybody out there and they forgot their lines and they froze. So now they have stage fright forever. Well, we go back to those incidents, you know, and it could be anything. I'm just using that as a possibility because I said I'm starting a mastermind, helping people to be able to speak, not to become speakers, but just to be able to speak if they need to, because these days everyone needs to speak, you know, whether it's on Facebook or anywhere on Skype, you know, you have to be able to speak to people. So we have to go through the trauma. And that is traumatic. When you're a little kid and people are laughing at you, that's like being, you know, I'm talking about shamans and tribes and stuff. It is like being evicted from your tribe, banished.
Yeah.
You can die. You can die when you're banished from your tribe. You can go off into the wilderness and die without your tribe. And so that's how it can feel. And, you know, we have an epidemic of loneliness. And so we go in to those incidents that happened, and we change them, and we rescue that child, usually it's a child, from that moment when she felt like she was banished. You know, she was all alone up on stage, and then she felt like shrinking into the, you know, curtains or disappearing, and which is leaving your body, which a lot of people do.
Right.
Dissociate.
When they're traumatized.
Yeah. So what we do is, and I was talking also last time about using stuffed animals. So right in my session, I hand a person a stuffed animal. I say, what would you like to do if you could go back to that little girl or boy on stage? What would you like to do right now? I'd like to just hold them and tell them it's okay. And I'll give them the stuffed animal and let them talk to that child. And this is therapy. This is the therapy of the future that I've been doing now for almost 35 years. But this is what the new brain science is finding. But they're experimenting and they don't really know yet. It hasn't coalesced as what to really do. They just know that talk therapy is dead. It's obsolete. It works for hand-holding and it works for insight. But it's not going to really get you where you need to go these days because the world is moving fast. And what I can do with someone when they go directly into that incident in their subconscious mind in 2 or 3 hours, I can give them pretty much a year on the couch. You know, a year of therapy in a couple of hours.
Wow. Yeah.
Let me just ask you a quick question here. Do you ever do the kind of sessions over the phone or Skype or something? Or do you need to have a one-on-one
sessions? Know what? Before Skype, you know, was really up and running and Wi-Fi was fast enough and everything, I was trying it over the phone and it actually worked. I had a couple of people that found me somehow from North Carolina and couldn't get down here and were freaking out. Their landlord was kicking them out of the house they were in and this guy was freaking out. I did a session and he went back to when literally his father had kicked him out of his house when he was a kid. And we did that over the phone. And it made him be able to stand up to his landlord after he did the session where he cleared it with his father. And they didn't get kicked out. You know,
this is the amazing thing about how the universe conspires to help us out, right? It's like he didn't heal it the first time around, right? You know, but if you live long enough, you'll be recycling out different things or recreating different scenarios where you have the opportunity to have a different outcome.
Yes, and you know, it's sort of the same thing with, you know, when you introduce me, you say that I, you know, one of my specialties is codependency. Well, it really, really, really is. And what happens is if we have a, you know, I'll say boyfriend because I know a lot of listeners are probably women, but I'm not trying to, you know, negate the fact that it can happen to men too. But say, you know,
yeah, I got a big, wide male audience. You wouldn't believe it.
Yes.
Excellent. You're lucky. That's great. And codependency can go both ways. But
okay, go ahead.
But you know, let's say it's a woman who finds a boyfriend who, you know, isn't so good to her, and she finally breaks up with him. But what happens? The next boyfriend does the same thing. That's what you're talking about, recycling. So the universe keeps giving us a chance. And that's what codependency is about. We have to learn how to deal with three particular characters, the rescuer, the victim, and the persecutor, who becomes your own protector and stops you from bringing in more and more persecutors, to play that role until you finally say, enough is enough, and you get off that wheel.
Wow, that's really good.
Yeah.
Earlier, you were going to mention, Debbie, about post-traumatic stress disorder, about the flight, fight, or the pause reaction.
The freezing,
yes.
Yes, which we kind of just went into when I talked about leaving bodies and dissociating, because that is, you know, that deer in the headlight with somebody on stage who can't remember their lines. Well, it could be that they literally went into that freeze and they really couldn't remember their lines because they were frozen and they couldn't move. And what we say is that their prefrontal cortex, the one that thinks and memorizes lines, is offline, literally offline. There is no, you can't retrieve those lines you're supposed to say, because that the part of your brain that has them memorized is gone. Your primitive brain.
I didn't realize what post-traumatic stress was. I learned about it when I was like 24, because at age 14, I was on one tractor, and I grew up on a dairy farm. We moved there when I was in seventh grade. And my dad was at a meeting and my mom was entertaining some neighbors. And my brother got the tractor stuck. And he wanted to get it out before my dad got back from this meeting. And so he said, Nance, you know, come with me. And it won't take long. You know, let's just pull this tractor out, and I need you on, you know, the tractor that's stuck, and I'll take the M and we'll, you know, I'll pull you out. So what happened was he had put the hook of the chain first on the same level, you know, on the lower level behind the seat. And I was on the WD-40, not WD-40, but that's an
you
oil.
Slip right off.
Yeah.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah. But it was a WD tractor. I forgot the type outside of the WD. But anyways, so he hooked the chain on the lower level behind the seat. And then he tried a few times, a little bit of the front end of his tractor went up, but nothing serious. And then that wasn't working. You know, he had a disc he was discing the field, and it was kind of semi-stuck in the swamp. And I'm like, God, it was really stuck in there. I don't know if he's going to get it out. So, you know, I'm 14. So he hooks the chain behind the bar, right behind the seat. So there's a, you know, big angle. And so he starts plowing ahead, and I start into the rosary, you know, Hail Mary, full of grace. You know, I was just, starting to just totally freak out. And pretty soon the tractor totally flipped over, and it happened so fast that my brother's reaction was to jump off the tractor. It flipped so fast that the steering wheel landed on his arm. And so he was stuck there. And then I just saw that happen, and he was just like, underneath the tractor. So I jump off the tractor. I run around to see him, and I go, Mark. And he goes, Nance, go shut your tractor off. And so I run and shut the tractor off. Thank God I did, because some oil spilled. I mean, we could have had a huge, you know, fire. But the fact that he had the wherewithal, you know, to tell me to go shut the tractor off. So then I shut the tractor off and I came back and he goes, okay, let's go. And he tries to pull himself out, not realizing that his whole arm is like under the track, you know, the steering wheel.
Wow.
And so I said, you know, I got to go get some help. And he goes, no, no, don't leave me. Don't leave me. So I started digging, you know, and there's just no way. So I was there like for an hour just trying to dig him out. And I said, Mark, I really got to get some help. I'm going to be right back. You know, so we were like a, you know, half mile from the farm. So I ran in and then, you know, he expected me to kind of, you know, dig him out. It took like our neighbor's tractor to lift the tractor up.
Wow. And,
yeah. But anyways, so life goes on. He's got a broken arm. It's amazing that he recovered. We met someone who her son died from an accident like that. The steering wheel landed right on his chest. So I'm like, my brother was just so lucky.
Wow.
It just wasn't his time. And so, go on with your life, right? 10 years later, every time I go running, I'm replaying the same incident. Every time, I just can't get rid of this.
And so running that half mile for help. Every time you run, your body remembers running for help.
Oh, that's what it was. That was the trigger. I couldn't figure it out. Yes. I'm like, it doesn't happen like when I'm doing anything outside of running.
Yeah.
Oh, I never put that together till right now. Thanks, Debbie. You are good.
Wow.
That's why I get paid the big bucks.
Yeah.
It was an unbelievable experience.
I make connections like that for people. Yeah. Yeah. When I hear people talk, it comes together. I see the connection. That makes a lot of sense. That's your body is going through that same motion as during that trauma. And so, yeah, you need to rescue yourself from that time. And because traumas happen whenever the PTSD, you know, whenever it comes back, it's as if it's in the present. So while you're running, you are running to the farm for help. It's as if you are there now.
Yeah. That's why it was, that's so it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a small question. Do you need Nancy and Debbie at the same time?
Yeah.
How do you, I'm glad that you realize that that was like something haunting your existence, you know, permanently there in your head.
Yeah.
Debbie, is there any specific exercises or, I don't know, mantras or whatever, call it whatever you want, that she could be doing to heal herself from such a tragedy? And I know there are a lot of people out there who are still trapped in that little jail of events like that have happened maybe in their childhood or maybe even later on in life. Is there any specific thing that it could be doing on a daily basis to get out of that jail?
Yeah, or immigrating like you did.
Yes.
You know, here, like under such extreme circumstances.
Yes, exactly.
He had to get out of the Republic of Congo for his life, and his whole family was threatened.
Oh, yes. I bet there's trauma there.
Yeah.
If I'm working with you, and let me first say, yes, now that Skype has been invented, I have great success. It's almost exactly the same. I hardly can tell a difference if I'm working with a person over Skype. I have clients all over the world now. So, yes, I see people anywhere. And it's very successful. If I'm working with you, I'm going to help you go back to that incident and heal it, you know, let it go through its entirety. But you do it from the subconscious mind. So for you to do it on your own, I would say basically whenever something comes up, to put yourself into the present and know that I am here now. I am in America. I am safe. And that was then. And to, you know, have some kind of touchstone that you know that was then and this is now. Because the trauma in PTSD The disorder is that you continue to replay it. You get the flashbacks, and it's as if it's happening now. So it's somehow to have some kind of touchstone. And, you know, I'm going to go back to the stuffed animal that I talked about. Because I don't know, Mike, how old were you? Were you a child, or was it just a few years ago?
Oh, 10 years ago.
Okay, and I don't know how old you are
now. He's got 4 kids.
Yeah, I was I was about 35 when that happened.
When that happened. Mm-hmm. You know, I consider it still that it was your younger self. So I would say, you know, that you still want to hold that traumatized self, that younger you, and tell Mike how sorry you are that he had to go through that and that he's safe now. You know, that you're with him, that you're in America, and that you're safe. And that is no longer happening. That was then. And then, you know, to go through the full rescue might include some imaginary changing of the incident, where if it was very traumatic and people were trying to kill you or something, you know, that you imagine almost like the parting of the Red Sea or something, and that everybody that was trying to kill you gets sucked into the sea. And, you know, I mean, something where you know you're safe, where you see it, you change that so that if you think of it in Harry Potter terms, if you happen to be a Harry Potter fan, then I would say you would do it with the comedy. Remember when they had to all learn how to come up with a funny scenario? Mm-hmm. And I forget what their magic word was, but all of a sudden they'd see like Snape with a tutu or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean when they were all in that one building training to?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to make it funny. Ridiculous. Like Ridiculoso, I think is what, you know.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah. I remember. Yes. Yeah.
So that you can make it something that's so ridiculously funny that all of a sudden, you know, all these guys' pants fall off or something, and they're trying to, or their pants fall to their, you know, ankles, and they're tripping, and they're, you know, ants, you know, red ants crawl over them and start biting them, or a hornet's nest gets loose and starts stinging them, and they all run away, you know, something like that changes the scene, that you can now remember it in that way and bring it up, just like when the Dementors would come.
Yeah,
imagine
right.
The Dementors being the, you know, that's what's plaguing you in your mind now. You want, you know, just at the time when you would be demented, you know, that you'd be haunted, that's the moment that you can bring up that funny scenario and remember that, I'm safe and they're being bitten by hornets and red ants.
Wow. That is so helpful.
That is so helpful.
Good.
Yes. Fantastic.
But, yeah.
Yeah. The power of the imagination.
Yeah.
We all have it. We just have to learn to use it.
Again, there's so much in Harry Potter
that
we can resurrect and use in our own lives.
I know. Thank God for J.K. Rowling.
Yeah. Do you have another question?
Maybe not a question, but a comment, but that might end up in a question probably. it's just, I did like very much the way you talked about yourself and just showed that you had a deep sense of freedom. As over against a lot of stuff that we have, you know, put into us by the society. And I put everything in a basket, including organized religions, too. I think that at some point we may be victim of, they put stuff into us and you need to dig them out at some point to free yourself. I just was very appreciative of how you could talk about your life as a, you know, a teenager at age of 20, coming out as gay and all of that. And I think that's not an easy thing to do, even today, even though it's more and more a knowledge that, you know, people can have a different sexual orientation and all of that. It takes a lot of strength to come out of there and just share that, you know.
And people don't know how to parent children.
Yes.
You know, who are different than them.
Absolutely.
I missed one word there.
Yeah.
Would you say something about parents and children? What did you say?
Well, I think that also parents don't know how to parent you know, children who are a different, you know, gender preference.
Sometimes, right, right. That's true.
So but they're looking for all kinds of, you know, ways to also get rid of kind of the way they were parented, where, you know, it just doesn't work.
Right, because we have to let people be themselves. We have to allow the expression and trust that who we are is something that only we know. And for anyone to try to homogenize everybody into one thing, you know, how is that possible? And every snowflake is different. How can all people supposed to be the same? It doesn't make any sense. So we have to be okay with being different and learning who we are. And that's why I want people to be able to express all those different parts of themselves. Because if we get stuck having to be one thing all the time, that's going to be suppressing other parts of us that can't be true to ourselves. And you can't be happy if you're not being true to yourself. And if you're not being true to yourself, you're going to be a miserable bitch or bastard to everybody else. You know? They're going to be unpleasant because you're living in your body in an unpleasant way, not expressing who you are. So you don't want anybody else to be happy either.
Yeah, there's so much more potential that we have that if we're not overcoming these barriers, how we could all, you know, absolutely, really help each other out a lot more.
Yes.
Yeah, but thank you for, you know, for your honoring me for doing what was difficult. But I was going to say, you know what's really funny now? It's because when people get to know you as one thing. So for 40 years, I lived as a lesbian in, you know, various relationships. Now I've got a boyfriend, and now it's hard for me to come out again. You know?
What the heck?
I haven't made my status on Facebook in a relationship yet, you know, because I'm not sure if I'm ready to come out as heterosexual.
Well, you did hear. Well, I think it's embracing who you are. It sounds to me like you're attracted to the spirit and the soul of the person.
Yes, and I always have. And so it was very difficult when it was very easy for me. I could have passed, you know, but I wanted to be true to myself. And I knew that there was more inside of me that needed to express. And I could have been happy, but it wouldn't have been fully happy. And, you know, if you're bisexual, you're always eliminating half of the potential. So really, you know, the idea of monogamy.
Eliminating half of the potential. Okay, I never heard that before. That is hysterical.
I have 100% potential dates, you know? I don't have to eliminate anybody. So, you know, just monogamy itself has to eliminate everybody but the person you're with. Right?
Okay.
Oh, fantastic.
All right. On that note. Okay, well, this is wonderful.
I told you I have a different way of looking at things.
Well, we love the way you look at things. Yes. We love you. Thank you so much for being so forthright and helping us. Also, I think you gave both Mike and I, and I'm sure the listeners will all take some healing pieces of this. And I'm going to take my daughter's little teddy bear to bed tonight.
Oh, good.
She's got about 15 of them.
Okay. Wow. But I tell people when they do take one from their kid, they have to then tell the kid, this is mommy's. You can't share. So you have to ask her, which one do you want to give to mommy? Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Be sure that it's her decision.
It's all in the setup.
Yeah, because you don't share. You're in your child. Oh, and then Mike. Okay, this is the line that I give people to live the life that they are, you know, can be responsible now for themselves.
Yes.
So every time you do anything in life, you have to ask yourself, is it in the best interest of my inner child for me to do this?
Is it in the best interest of my inner child?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that's something you could live. You can live by.
That's powerful.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay.
Wow.
Oh, a delight. We'll be talking again. Thank you so much for sharing so much of who you are and without restraint. I just really appreciate the depth of our three conversations and the other ones that we've had leading up to these.
You must have known when we met in the hot tub.
this relationship is going somewhere.
A good conversation started there. Look where they're taking us.
Yeah, in a non-sexual way.
With a pump got up.
Okay, Mike, anything else you want to take us out with?
Well, thank you very much. That was so rich. We can keep it up going, but I guess we hit the point where we probably can, you know, call it a day.
That's right. We're now in our happy places again. So I guess you've done your job.
Good.
Feel so much better than when I started our very, very first conversation. So anyways, thank you for sharing all your gifts with the world. And I know that your journey has been so difficult as a pioneer. That I really applaud you and have so much respect for you, and appreciate that you kept with your pioneering journey to keep finding who you are and continue to do that throughout the rest of your life. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
And I hope we do it again.
All right, we will. Absolutely. Okay. Good. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. See you next week.